they are definitely getting hit by the bottom line and their profits. And McDonald's cannot show that there's any losses, right? Because it's bad for the worldwide franchise. So it is effective in that sense, but also to protect the brand. Because clearly, McDonald's, the parent company here in the U.S., saw that the local franchisees in Israel, well, they were getting political with their brand. And that is what corporations stay away from. They don't want to be political. In fact, they probably have policies for franchisees to not engage in politics because it hurts their overall worldwide brand. So I can see McDonald's and Starbucks and Burger King, KFC, all the way down the line, pulling their brand if the franchisee becomes political. And in this instance, by giving free meals to the Israeli soldiers, that turned McDonald's into something that is not a you know, a Switzerland of brands where they stay out of wars and conflicts, but it is clearly in support of the soldiers. Whether you agree with that or not, that is probably going against their franchisee's licensing agreement.
McDonald's has blamed the boycott campaign on misinformation about its brand. It all started when McDonald, a franchise in Israel, run by Alonia Limited, said it would provide free meals to Israeli regime forces as well as hospitals. That said, there was also another motive for McDonald's to be targeted. Over the years, the stores with their highly recognizable golden arches have been repeatedly targeted as symbols of the United States, especially in West Asia. As such, the U.S. is known to not only conduct wars, but also to be a staunch supporter of the Israeli regime. Examples are the Second Palestinian Intifada, the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, and the Arab Spring protests, especially in Cairo, Egypt. Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. Mahdi Abbasian is on assignment. The boycott campaign against Israel is in full swing. Although McDonald's has suffered, other major brands are also taking a hit. Let's take the case of Coca-Cola, but from the angle of why it needs to be targeted. Well, Coca-Cola operates in a settlement in occupied Palestine that's called Atarat, an illegal Israeli settlement located in the occupied West Bank. For the settlement of Atarat to be built, Palestinian homes were demolished, and their original residents were banned from returning despite residing there for generations. By having an Israeli franchise in the illegal Israeli settlement of Atarat, Coca-Cola is ignoring international law and is profiting from the illegal occupation. Atarat is one of 250 illegal settlements. Therefore, selling Coca-Cola helps sustain Israel's illegal occupation of Palestine, as it allows Coca-Cola to profit from the land stolen from Palestinians. Now, in the West Asia region, sensitivities to Israeli-linked products are at an all-time high. Consumers in this part of the world are making a concerted effort not to purchase products that lead to Israel profiting from its genocidal war. Billboards, for example, in Kuwait have pictures of children covered in blood, accompanied by the shocking "Did you kill a Palestinian today?" alongside the hashtag boycotters. In Qatar, some Western companies were forced to close after their management published pro-Israel content on social media. The branches of the American cafe Pura Vida Miami and the French pastry shop Maître Choux closed their doors in Doha. There are some unexpected positive outcomes resulting from the U.S.-Israeli genocidal aggression against Palestinians, like a case in Egypt. The Egyptian carbonated drinks company Spiro Spathis, which was not very popular before the aggression, has now become extremely popular as an alternative to Pepsi and Coca-Cola after calls to boycott both. The company, which was founded back in the year 1920, published a statement on its Facebook page as an example, stating that it had received more than 15,000 CVs when it announced that it was hiring extra staff in order to expand its activities, given the higher demand for its products. This is just one of many examples of how local products are now the choice instead of the major brands. That does it for this Quick Take section. Hope you liked it. The success of the boycott campaign has been catapulted into another level ever since the Operation Al-Aqsa flood. There's no denying in that. Well, the longer the war drags on, the more effective and widespread the campaign will be. But what this campaign has done is to also turn the focus on domestic production in the respective countries, who are obviously Palestine-friendly, and of course, it has highlighted the plight of the Palestinians. That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for being with us. Hope you enjoyed it. From the Kavitakli and the team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of Chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 17th verse of Chapter Naml.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَحُشِرَ لِسُلَيْمَانَ جُنُودُهُ مِنَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنسِ وَالطَّيْرِ فَهُمْ يُوزَعُونَ
And gathered for Solomon were his soldiers of the jinn, and men, and birds, and they were marching in rows.
So, as you listen to the verse, brothers and sisters, we understood that for Solomon is gathered his host of jinn and men and birds. So he controlled them all. وَحُشِرَ لِسُلَيْمَانَ جُنُودُهُ مِنَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنسِ وَالطَّيْرِ So, they were all in his army. فَهُمْ يُوزَعُونَ And this shows that he had a very strong and extensive power, an army, that they had to stay, the beginning parts, the beginning rows had to be stopped in order for the others to arrive. So, as we said in the previous episode, in the different parts and occasions, the Holy Quran has talked about jinn, and it is the fact that they have also been called and addressed by the Almighty Allah, يَا مَعْشَرَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنسِ. So they are the ones who have the power to think, they have males and females, they have different kinds of desires, and regarding Prophet Solomon, some of these actually creatures of the Almighty Allah were builders and divers for him. Now, the verse says that the Almighty Allah had so much might and power, and he had given Prophet Solomon some of his power as well. So, the verse says, وَحُشِرَ لِسُلَيْمَانَ جُنُودُهُ مِنَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنسِ وَالطَّيْرِ. And this shows that the forces, the number of the army, was so large that some of them had to be stopped in order to regulate the army. And then it is emphasized upon, فَهُمْ يُوزَعُونَ. They were kept in order. Now, we also talked about the term of حُشِرَ, which comes from حَشْر, and it means bringing out the crowd. And when we take the concept of the next verse, with this one as well, we understand that some believe that this territory and land of ants that Solomon arrived is about Syria, and some others believe that it is about Taif. Now, since the statement of this matter had not any effect on the point of the ethical and educational aspects, it has not been spoken of. But what is more important is how large and powerful and massive the army of Solomon was.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran. By Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, as you were with us, dear listeners, we understood that Prophet Solomon had a very powerful army made of jinn, ins, and also tayr. So, both from humankind's jinn, and also from the birds. And some commentators, we have to mention, that have discussed the fact that whether the whole human beings, jinn and birds, were the army of Solomon, or part of them formulated this army. This discussion seems rather needless, because undoubtedly Solomon did not govern the whole earth, and the realm of his government was just something about Syria, Jerusalem, and probably some other lands around there. And also, it is understood from the later verses that Solomon had not any kind of dominion over Yemen. And at that time, he did not control Yemen. And he gained his authority over there only after the event of Hupo and the submission of the Queen of Sheba. Now, the Quranic phrase tafaqqat at-tayr, which is mentioned in the upcoming verses, shows that among the birds which were in the obedience of Solomon, there was a hupo that when Solomon did not see it over there, he asked about it. So, if all birds were included, and there were thousands of hoopoes among them, this meaning could not be correct. So, this is where you have to be careful regarding your understandings from the Holy Quran. The fact that the Holy Quran mentions in this verse is that Prophet Solomon had a very powerful and massive army made up from some parts of men, some parts and groups of jinn, and also some groups of tayr and birds. This is all we understand from this very verse. Also, some more putting this verse along with other verses and traditions of the Holy Quran. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. In the next episode, we will, God willing, talk about the 18th verse of Chapter Naml. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always left for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
So dear brothers and sisters in Islam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Being a father in the Islamic sense is a real jihad. It is so important. And we appreciate, we respect, we revere our fathers. When you do it the Islamic way, that means you take Amirul Mu'mineen to be your role model. That means that you are the embodiment of two important traits. From one side, love, mercy, kindness. On the other side, strength, determination, and sacrifice. So yes, it's very important when our little girls see that they're special, that their dad loves them. When our wives are honored, when our children see that we will kiss our mother's hands, this ensures that those small little girls grow up knowing They're special because Allah created them to be women. When we play games with our boys, when we take them aside, when we teach them the ropes, that's ensuring that the next generation will grow up to be men's men. So, in addition to that, I also want to offer some encouragement for our young brothers, our young soldiers, inshallah, to also one day, inshallah soon, also become fathers and husbands, inshallah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad wa Ajal Farajal. Now, alhamdulillah, it's a wonderful occasion. We were blessed with wonderful poetry. Before that, the beautiful ayat of the Quran, where we're now making it not a filler. It's not something that we do before the speech starts, but we're actually listening to the verses. The verses are selected, and then we're looking at the translation, if we're not familiar with the Arabic language, to get benefit from the Quran. After this, instead of us having the Q&A portion, allow me to call an audible, inshallah, we want to do this. We want to have both a video that we've prepared for our youth to see. So we're going to talk about some of the fada'il of the Ahlul Bayt, but we want our small children, inshallah, to be able to see and then hear these fada'il narrated by one of our youth. So that's one. And then also, inshallah, afterwards, we're going to have a maulid recited by one of our brothers. So we're hoping that everybody stays for that. So no Q&A, but inshallah, afterwards, we'll go down and we'll break bread together, inshallah. But salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. So, like it or not, my speech is the serious part of the program. We actually have a very serious matter to discuss. A very challenging matter. A very serious matter to discuss. We're going over, by the grace of God, a Quranic masterpiece. But it's important for us to realize what we're doing here. There are certain verses of the Quran that the Urafa would recite for their students. I'm going to mention this verse of the Quran, but the point is very important. Sometimes somebody will be making a lot of effort. They will be spinning their wheels. They'll be thinking they're doing everything correct, only to find out that they've wasted their time and they haven't been as effective as they should have been for the cause of Allah. So this is a verse of Quran. Brothers and sisters, if you can follow with me, this is surah number 18. So if everybody can turn to surah number 18. 18, surah Kaf, it should be surah Kaf. And then verse number 103. So if brothers and sisters, the verse is simple, let's read it together, but then let's look for the message and then why the reminder, why the serious part of the program. The verse says this, قُلْ, so God is instructing the prophet, say, قُلْ, هَلْ نُنَبِّئُكُمْ بِالْأَخْسَرِينَ أَعْمَالًا, shall we not inform you with those who are the greatest losers when it comes to effort? There are some people who are making all kinds of effort, spinning their wheels, trying. But God says this about them. Who are these people who God is saying to the prophet, we should inform you of those who are the biggest losers when it comes to effort? God says this in the next verse. Alladhina, those who, dhalla sa'yuhum fil hayat ad-dunya, their effort, that Herculean effort that they're making, is lost in the life of this world. They're making effort, but it's lost. Wahum, and this is the sad part, the kicker. Wahum yahsabuna annahum yuhsinuna sun'a. They think they're doing such a great job. I'm spending time, I'm making effort. I think I'm doing a great job. What happened? What went wrong? Brothers and sisters, we reminded ourselves from the beginning about the importance of developing a Quranic aqidah, a Quranic worldview, so that we, like the Quran, we view God, Deen, Islam, fundamental concepts the way it was introduced to us in the Quran. What happens if I don't do this? Maybe I'll be spinning my wheels. And then in the end, I won't get that reward that I'm expecting. I'm actually a deterrent to the Imam arriving because I haven't troubled myself with relearning Islam. So, brothers and sisters, there's a very beautiful hadith from the sixth Imam when he says this. This is again, you and I, alhamdulillah, we have the grace of God to commemorate the wilayah of Ali ibn Abi Talib. How many shuhada have given their lives for us to be able to do this? How many great ulama, how many mu'mineen, how much struggle, how much resistance for you and I to be able to sit here and gather and literally without fear to be able to talk about the wilayah of Ali. The Imam tells us this about the wilayah of Ali. Imam Sadiq now speaking. He says, Wilayati li Ali ibn Abi Talib. So the wilaya that I, Imam Sadiq, have of Ali ibn Abi Talib, ahabbu ilayya, is more beloved to me, Imam Sadiq, min wiladati min. I am happier, I am more grateful, I feel more blessed by the wilaya of Ali than I do being the biological son of Ali. It is so important to get it right. What is wilaya? Am I a wali? Am I muwali? Am I helping? So, the reason for doing this is to go over a book like this, because the Prophet has told us, he says, Aliyun ma'al Qur'an, that Ali is with the Qur'an, wal Qur'an ma'ali. And the Qur'an is also with Ali. That means we need to know the Qur'an, to get to know. And that's why going over a subject-wise tafsir like this is so important for all of us. So what happens is we're going to be redefining certain Quranic terms. These terms are used a lot in the Quran, but if the understanding is wrong, we might end up not benefiting.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareem Adi Ali Hali Hakim Mati Ghafur Shakur Wadu قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Dear listeners, this is the second part of A Window to Palestine. A Window to Palestine.
Ya estamos de regreso para seguir las conversaciones que hemos tenido.
We are now back to continue the conversation we had to learn about the Palestinian diaspora in Chile. Today I invite you to talk with Valentina Salvador Guagui, a Chilean doctor of Palestinian origin, who has been working recently since the beginning of the genocide in Gaza with a group of doctors to try to help. Let's learn a little bit more about Valentina through the following video.
Un poco más sobre Valentina.
Valentina Salvador es nieta de palestinos.
Valentina Salvador is the granddaughter of Palestinians. She studied medicine and is a specialist in surgeries for oncological diseases. She learned the love of cooking from her grandmother, and grow up with recipes that she still continues to prepare and that connect her with the cultural traditions of her homeland. In 2017, she traveled to Palestine as part of a program that brought together the diaspora from different continents. She returned with the memory of a kind, happy and welcoming people who enjoyed life with simplicity despite the tensions of the occupation, the wall, and the many shortcomings. As part of the Doctor Society of Palestine, where some 300 specialists participate, they began to pressure scientific societies to play a more active role and denounce the genocide. The events, however, have led them to continue their work raising funds to send medical supplies through the Chilean embassy in Egypt. Valentina believes that not only is the lack of food and water serious, the treatments that were left unfinished, the lack of vaccines and the lack of medical care in short are also other slow and silent ways of exterminating the Palestinian nation.
Hello, Valentina. Thank you very much for accepting our invitation. You are third generation. On what date and for what reasons do your parents migrated here?
Acerca de la llegada de tus padres.
I'm sorry, your grandparents.
De mis abuelos, sí. Daniel, muchas gracias por la invitación. Un honor.
Well, of course, my grandparents. Daniel, thank you very much for the invitation. It is an honor to be here representing the Doctors of Palestine. Look, my family on both sides come more or less before the Nakba. It was mainly as a result of the persecutions by the Ottoman Empire. For example, my family name is Salvador. My grandfather arrived in Chile around 1910. Several of his children were born in Betlalal, but my grandfather was born here in Chile, in the town of Catamu, where they settled upon their arrival in Chile. On the other hand, in depth, my grandfather's wife, Victoria Issa, came to Chile directly from Palestine. Around 1929-1930, my grandfather's father arrived here with them, and from there, in the bottom line, the family has settled in this land.
Aquí hay dos eventos que es importante destacar.
Here there are two events that are important to highlight. It was around the First World War that the Palestinians arrived. Turkish Ottoman Empire decided for the first time to force the inhabitants to defend the empire in any possible wars that might arise. And they began, for the first time, to recruit the firstborn children, the eldest of each family. And that makes many Christians and also Jews send their children out of Palestine to avoid taking them to the war. In the case of the grandmother, she surely came because of the great general strike of the 29th, where the colonization process had already begun, and we were at the gates of the Nakba, but the Nakba was already planned. This is very interesting because this also generates surely the same thing that happened in your family. A generational gap. The children of that do not have much of a relationship with Palestine. They do not pass on the language, for example. And it is always the third generation that recovers Palestinianity. What was that process like? What was it that set it off? And what are you up to today?
¿Qué fue lo que lo detonó y en qué estás hoy día?
Mira, tal cual como tú dices,
look, just like you say, it happens to me also. Well, obviously, in my parents' house, they spoke an Arabic language, and being born in Chile, they kind of had to recover everything because in Chile, things were a little different. It's just like you say, they kind of experienced Palestine in the house.
Cosa que para nosotros fue diferente.
Something that was different for us. I think I get emotional because of the topic, sorry. But I think I have returned to it. I come from a school with a lot of social sense, a lot of politics. I don't think I had ever questioned it, like where it comes from. But yes, I think it was my dad who instilled it into me. Regardless of the fact that I seldom spoke, there was always these Palestinian things in my house. Always, always. Everything had to do with it. Food, traditions. And I think this provoked my sense of curiosity to investigate what this Palestinian thing they were talking about is. So I started to investigate, to learn from history. When people spoke to me, I like to have information and tell them what this is, what Palestine is, what is happening, because they asked me at school. Deep down, there was an important Palestinian group that would talk about the issue of Palestine, and sometimes I felt like I had to participate in such arguments. The Palestinian issue always resonated in my head. It's good. It catches my attention because I'm the most Palestinian-like person in my generation.
In fact, you are the first to travel to Palestine.
Exactly. In 2017, I said that I really have to go. I have to see what happens. And in addition to being the most beautiful trip of my life, at the same time, it is also a very powerful trip.
You're also sensations and emotions only. I mean, it is not verbal information to transfer, but implicit information that comes not only from traditions, but also from the undeclared relationship that is always present in our lives. What was it like to return to Palestine?
Mira, yo el año anterior al viaje leí el libro de Lalina Merwan, El Volverse Palestina.
Look, the year before the trip, I read Lina Meruana's book, Becoming Palestine. It affected me deeply. It was really the sensation I felt. And when you get there, as you say, it is like a feeling of being found, of happiness, of belonging, of understanding your origin, of identifying with all that, and at the same time, of feeling that they have this tremendous bond with Chile. Everyone watches Palestino soccer matches. Everyone has a family. They ask you, do you know this one? Do you know that one? And this really exists. Although they are so many kilometers away, but at the same time, it is so close, near our hearts. And you see the people, how they are in their houses, what they have in their houses, and you say, I am from here.
Well, we must highlight one thing that is geographical and not many people are aware of. Palestine and this metropolitan region are at the same degrees of southern and northern latitude, and therefore they have the same seasons, they have the same fruits, they have the same types of food, and they are also very similar in terms of geographical situations. After the October the 7th attack, you, together with a group of doctors, and also Teresa Chomali, who already has more experience in this, formed this group of doctors for Palestine, and they took on the task of trying to bring medical missions to Gaza. This group today has no way to operate in the current situation in Gaza and act against the humanitarian crisis that has generated this genocide. This has been carried out throughout the West. It is no longer just Israel. South Africa has also filed a lawsuit against the United States and England for complicity. What do you want? And what progress have you made to reach doctors in Palestine and help them to be able to collaborate?
Mira, la verdad que ha sido...
Look, the truth is that it has been very good in many ways. This group that was formed was born from desperation, I would say, from Teresa Chomali, from seeing how little we could do. The truth is that the organizations from civil society, above all us as doctors, can do little about it. So at the beginning of November, she created this WhatsApp group in which actually we experienced something like an explosion of ideas, of political thoughts, of what to do and what not to do. And from there, Teresa created a committee, and I am a member of this committee, which has enabled us to organize different things. Because in the first place, we know she is already in contact with people there, and because we see it, of course, in the media, that currently it is impossible at this moment to do something to go there. But since we felt the need, we started to do a campaign in which we are raising money to purchase medical supplies and give them to the hospitals. We have received information and are aware of the needs. Hospitals are the first priority. There are plenty of needs, but we have to narrow them down and see what we can really send. As doctors for Palestine, we went to the Chancellery and we were very well received there. The government fund of Chile was committed to helping us in every possible way, that is, the delivery of these supplies. Because it has happened that Chile even donated money to UNRWA and other entities, but this money is wasted on probably other needs of another type. So the idea is that through the Embassy of Chile in Egypt, we are going to purchase these supplies and they are going to help us deliver them directly to the hospital directors who are directly in charge of receiving these aids.
If someone wants to join Doctors for Palestine, how do they do it?
Look, we have this WhatsApp group. There is an Instagram account named Doctors for Palestine also. Via this account, one can also contact the group, and there in the Instagram group, you will find a form that must be completed that helps us organize better and get to know each other. As doctors in Palestine, many of us have different specialties, but we did not know each other before joining this group. We didn't know that, for example, we work in the same place sometimes. So this has been quite fruitful in terms of being a means for knowing each other who are in Chile and working together. And then through Instagram or WhatsApp, we will invite the volunteer to join us. And we are also doing now a campaign which is about the donation of 250 million pesos. We are also doing a bingo, and we had it in the previous week at the Palestinian Club with the aim of reaching this goal of 250 million of pesos. This money is going to be used for medical supplies.
Very good. A question that many of the doctors and the doctors who are seeing us are going to ask themselves. Is it only the Chilean doctors of Palestinian origin, or can Chilean doctors also participate?
No, una muy buena pregunta. De hecho, hay muchos médicos no palestinos.
A very good question. In fact, there are many non-Palestinian doctors. There are doctors who have even gone to the missions in Gaza who know the place perfectly but have nothing to do with Palestine. In fact, many of them are here through their acquaintances. There is even a group of doctors who have canceled their vacations and donated their money to fund for our campaign. They are not even Palestinians, but they say what matters to them is the humanitarian aspect of this issue. The point is that we cannot understand. There's tremendous violence here, there's a catastrophe, and we are in a lot of pain and a lot of despair, but as a civil society, we cannot do anything. So we have a prepared group of approximately 50 people. We hope to eventually be able to go there. The desire is there, and we just need permission. The truth is that there is so much destruction and everything, and we know there is a huge need for our specialties. I mean, imagine with everything that has happened, like the number of diseases that are probably obsolete in that area. There have been no vaccinations, the need for cancer checks, need of the post-war wound, the need for plastic surgery. The needs are multiple and huge. So really, as a group, we hope to be able to do many more things. We hope to achieve the required money, and we have to raise it to fulfill our goals.
Juntar para que sea significativo. Si no,
bueno, esto es una muestra más.
Well, here's another example of the great distance that exists between the Western governments that are complicit in the genocide and the civil societies that around the world today are mobilizing to support the Palestinian people, not only in Gaza, but also in the West Bank and Jerusalem al-Quds. I thank you, Valentina, for accepting this invitation, and I wish you much success in the initiatives that you are undertaking. Greetings to all the participants of Doctors for Palestine group.
Thank you very much, Danielle.
Let's take a break, and we'll be back in a minute to learn a little more about the history of the Zionist project and how it has affected Palestine.
These Israelis gathered to watch the bombardment of Gaza while enjoying soft drinks and snacks. People dragged plastic chairs or even sofas to the top of a hill and cheered on their military as if they were watching some sort of sport.
They chose to rule them. It's their fault. They got it to where it is now, not us.
But don't you think you'll get worse by pulling them?
No, I think that's the only solution. I think they should just clear off all the city. Just take it off the ground. Yes, I'm a little bit fast.
What's wrong with these people?
During the Arab-Israeli War of 1948, more than 700,000 Palestinians are forced into exile. It is the Nakba. It means catastrophe in Arabic. The Haganah forces search for the Arabs, and the barricades are set up to identify those who have not abandoned the city. The Haganah is a paramilitary organization that constitutes the core of the Israeli forces and is responsible for the expulsion of Palestinians. Some of them flee on their own will just to escape the violence. Their lands and houses no longer belong to them. Most of them go to Gaza, Jordan, Lebanon, or Syria.
Los videos que acabamos de ver nos muestran
just show us three different facets of the Zionist project. First, some Israeli citizens are enjoying watching the genocide from a hill in the occupied territories and cheering their army doing what the Nazis did with them. It is as if it were a film made in Hollywood. Second, we see an Israeli project, a real estate project to be located in the Gaza Strip, a coastal area oriented towards the north and with tourist potential, highly desired by Western imperialists. Third, we see images of the Nakba and all the destruction and this whole plan known as the Plan Dalet to expel about 700,000 Palestinians, destroying 500 villages, and the life, history, and geography of those who had lived in this territory for centuries. Well, let's see the story on the maps to see the evolution of this, to see if indeed, as Finkelstein said, what happened on October 7th justifies what came afterwards. Does what has happened in the last 75 years justify the complete dismantling of a fascist and neo-colonial regime like that of Israel? This is Palestine at the beginning of the 20th century, where Jews, Christians, Muslims, and atheists lived together without any problem and in absolute peace and brotherhood, with a proportion of the Jewish population close to 5%. Shortly after, in the first Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland in 1897, Theodor Herzl, recognized as the father of contemporary Zionism, presented his project called the Jewish State to form a Jewish national home in Palestine. Of course, the lobby carried out throughout the West and with the main powers of the time allowing them to achieve in 1917 the Balfour Declaration, known as the formal beginning of the Palestinian tragedy. Great Britain, the current England, without having any right to do so, committed themselves to the Zionist organization and to give Palestine a group of foreigners coming from all over the world. This declaration was put into practice by an illegal immigration that sought to change things on the ground and change the proportion of the population. In 1947, the population of Jewish religion was about 30%, but above religion, the Zionist population came in, but not only as refugees seeking support, but to start the programs of Tsarist Russia and also the Nazi Holocaust. They came to usurp everything. They made the newly born United Nations, which had been created from the failure of the Society of Nations, approved the partitions of Palestine, an organization that was established to protect the right of self-determination of the people, approved the partition of Palestine. And guess who were not invited to the meeting? The Palestinians. That is, in complete absence of the main owners of the land, they gave 55% of historical Palestine to the Zionist organization and 44% divided into three unconnected zones to the Palestinians. Clearly, there was no possibility that either of these two states would be consolidated as they were intended. Obviously, the Palestinians rejected, but Zionism also rejected it and advanced in the war of 1948 until it occupied 78% of historical Palestine in 1980. What we know today as occupied territory remained in the hands of Jordan and Egypt, but this lasted about 20 years until the war of 1967, where Israel made use of its great military power and its always strong support from the Western powers, and mainly from the United States, from Europe and Germany, tried to pay the blame for the Nazi Holocaust with Palestinian blood. They advanced on the entire territories and on the heights of the Syrian Golan and a strip of Lebanese territories that remained occupied for more than two decades. Today, after years of extermination, after years of a genocidal policy on the parts of Israel with the Oslo Agreement, the Palestinian territories are reduced to a 15% and also in the form of small Bastustans without connections to each other. In such a way, they not only intend to drown the Palestinian population, but also the Palestinian economy. Now they continue encouraging or forcing in every possible way the Palestinian population to leave the place. But we Palestinians have resisted stubbornly. We have stayed on the lands to which we belong, and we have no intention of abandoning this land to make way for the continuity of the neocolonial Zionist project. And that is why we today face an ongoing genocide in Gaza, because the leaders of the Zionist project have understood that the foreigners can never defeat those who have remained in this land forever. I offer you the floor. We have time for two questions, please.
Un saludo.
Greetings. My name is Jorge Avedrapo. Here is my question. It is true that the Zionists considered several options, territorial options, to carry out their projects among some Latin American countries. I mean, finally, what could happen in the future at a global level if the advance of Israel's colonial project is not stopped?
El avance del proyecto colonial de Israel.
Efectivamente, Jorge, entre el primero y el cuarto Congreso sionista.
Indeed, Jorge, between the first and the fourth Zionist congresses, most of them held in Basel, Switzerland, several alternatives were put into discussion, including Uganda and Chilean-Argentine Patagonia. The underlying theme was that there was no excuse that could be used to expel the inhabitants of these territories, and therefore they resorted to the myths of the biblical promise and the chosen people to sustain a colonial project like Zionism. And that is why Palestine ended up being chosen. Furthermore, if one looks at this as a projection not only of a Palestinian issue, because the problem is not only here. This is a problem of the global North-South confrontation, and therefore what happens in Palestine will have an intimate relationship with what happens in the Western Sahara, with what happens in other parts of the world, in Gualmapo, in our country, where the hegemonic classes, world imperialism and transnational imperialism must do everything possible to protect the interests they harvest through occupying every inch of this territory and controlling every inch of the market and effectively appropriating any common property or natural resources. This strategy exists in the world. Therefore, from my humble perspective, the only possibility of reaching a just solution in Palestine is the overcoming of capitalism on a global scale.
Es la superación del capitalismo a escala global.
Hola, mi nombre es Carlota.
I am Carolina Spina. I am president of the Luis Emilio Recovera Collection and Research Center in Zeiler. My question is, why is the word apartheid used to refer to the Israeli policy against Palestine?
El apartheid es un concepto que se utiliza.
Apartheid is a concept that is used to refer to states or societies where there are two different systems inside them. For example, in South African apartheid, where within the same country, South Africa, there was a system for whites and a system for people of African descent. This system is seen today in Palestine and also in Israel, because not only within Israel there are first and second category citizens and different systems for those who are historically Palestinian and for Israelis. Citizens, but things are also tough for those who have recently arrived there and have just adopted Israeli citizenship. That's because they are Zionists and have many more rights than the Palestinians who have lived in Israel since before their birth. In addition, what we are seeing today in Gaza and the West Bank is a situation where the Israelis and the occupation, the illegal occupying power, the illegal Israeli settlers have all the rights, but the Palestinians have none. That is why the word apartheid was coined, and that is why it has been expanding the possibility of everyone recognizing the Israeli occupation as an apartheid system. We must never forget that in 1974, the United Nations General Assembly decreed that Zionism was a form of racism, homologously comparable to South African apartheid. This is while due to the changes in the correlation of forces and North American and European pressure, this resolution was annulled several decades later. But this has not annulled the spirit and essence of Zionism, that in all these years, nothing has changed.
Lo he mencionado en otros programas.
I have mentioned it in other programs, and I reiterate it today with more force than ever. Palestine, in its 5,000 years of history, has lived only 120 years of peace. The Palestinian people consisted of an ethnic strain absolutely intercultural, composed of Jews, Christians, Muslims, atheists, belonging to diverse peoples who have settled in Palestine at some point in history. They have been there since before the first invaders arrived, and they will surely be there after the last ones leave. Today, thousands of supposed Israeli citizens have abandoned Israel because they no longer feel safe among the Palestinians. The Palestinian nation sink their legs and roots into the ground of their homeland, where they are born, grow, and die. That's because Palestine is their land. I invite you to watch this program next week to learn more about the concept of genocide in Gaza. Don't miss the next episode of A Window to Palestine.
En el próximo capítulo de Ventana a Palestina.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sayyid Zain. Sayyid Zain, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
For today's episode of the program Viewpoints, we want to talk about the negative effects of the cyberspace, also known as the virtual world, on the family and the foundation of the family, relation between family members. A major question is about the picture we make out of the world. Is it the same, the usage of social media in the developed countries and the non-developed ones? I mean, the food that we consume socially, I mean, in terms of the media, is it the same in the developed and the non-developed ones or not?
I'm not sure if I can give a complete answer for that. I haven't completely looked at what people are fed over there versus what people are fed over here.
Taking a look at the because you had the experience of living over there, you know, in non-Islamic lands. Are the people usually busy with what the people in the non-developed lands are busy with, or not over there?
It's almost the same, obviously, over there, because, you know, internet speeds are faster, these kind of things. They're more easier access to videos and movies. Okay. So people over there, I think they watch, you know, movies and these kind of things maybe more than the people in the East. Unfortunately, so I don't have the statistics for it, but pornography is very big in the West. Now, in the Eastern world, I'm not sure to what extent it's there. It seems it's less. But over there, it's very, very big. You know, very soon, you know, these young people, they go into watching pornography and these kind of corruptions as well. So maybe that's one difference that I can see between East and the West.
Okay, that's right. The concept of global village, Sheikh Rouhani, is an important topic. You know, how do you think that the social media and the cyberspace facilitates the establishment of the global village all across the world? People knowing about each other's culture, about each other's language, and day by day being affected by each other, so becoming the same in terms of clothing, in terms of ethics, in terms of the usage of language, and so on. What are the dangers?
You know, so many years back, maybe 35 or 40 years back, I remember that once there was an intellectual, he was criticizing severely the late Sheikh Abbas Qumi, that why did this man write du'as for every hours of the day? You know, there's a du'a, if you go to the Mafatih al-Janan, you find this, that for every, for example, for 1 o'clock we have a du'a, for 2 o'clock, for 3 o'clock, every hour we have du'a in Mafatih. There was a guy, an intellectual guy, who was criticizing him that, oh, look, people, Muslims have nothing to do during the day, just saying du'a. But now when we see the brothers and sisters, we see sometimes the people are busy for many hours, with this mobile and internet cyberspace, I remember that this, if Muslims just recite this dua, at least, for example, at the beginning of an hour, read this dua and then continue being busy, okay, that would be more useful, yeah? I remember that how Islam gives importance for every moment of Muslim not to be wasted. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have time, at the beginning of every hour, you can recite a dua that's recorded. You know, sometimes I want to just, if I'm wrong, you can correct me. Sometimes there are lots of things, always there are lots of things, that we do not need to know them. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Everything should not be known. There's no need. Unfortunately, nowadays, this global village that you mentioned,
yes,
what do I need to, for example, know about that, for example, people, that group of people, that society, that community, I don't know, that country, that nation, about their, for example, I don't know, cultural, maybe different kind of things that